My name's Bernadette Russell.
And my name is Gareth Briley.
And we are White Rabbit, and we're very pleased to present the fourth, the final podcast in our series of podcasts of short stories on the theme of wonder, written by wonderful local writers from the Kent area in collaboration with Revelation, a wonderful venue in Ashford.
And we're hoping to do the live show of a whole series of writers that we selected back in March, but due to unforeseen circumstances, COVID, we are now going to do it in October, fingers crossed. So keep out, listen for news for that.
So we'll have more news coming about that shortly. But without further ado, kick off your shoes and put your slippers on or your fluffy socks, whatever you like.
Yeah, get yourself a drink, maybe a hot toddy, maybe a hot chocolate.
Lovely, whatever is your particular poison. Relax, sit back and enjoy these fantastic stories from our fantastic writers. The first story is called The Women on the Bus, and it's by Joe Tandy. And this is read by myself, Bernadette Russell, and the fantastic Emma Waterford. Hope you enjoy. My legs don't work as well as they used to, see? I can't walk. Well, I don't really want to. My Frankie loved a walk. Come see the trees and squelch the mulch, he'd say. Walking reminds me of him. I get on outside my house. 57 years we've been there, and now them new houses are going up behind, all modern and looking over my garden. I get on outside my house and I watch the houses as we go past. When it's raining, the houses look different, like going somewhere new. If I walk, it hurts. Not as much as missing Frank. He was a grumpy bugger most times, but he loved to walk. The countryside was nearly his favourite, but the beach was his love. Walking along the sand, well, his smile would be brighter than the sun. I caught the coastal bus to the sea once, but seeing the sand and the waves, I couldn't get off on account of missing him. I couldn't breathe. I come into town and walk around the shops a bit. He hated shopping and wouldn't come with me. I walk around and look in the shops, get a cup of tea in a little cafe in the square. And it's like he'd be waiting for me at home, see? Like he's still here and I don't have to miss him anymore.
There's a bit of a stroll to the bus stop, isn't there, Maisie? We stroll along, you and me, and then we wait for the bus. And we chatter while we wait, don't we? Then the bus comes and we get on. It's only £2 return into town. And we can sit near to the front with the buggy park, so you can see everything. Isn't that right, Maisie? We sit near the front and all the grannies and grandpas look at you and go, well, aren't you a little sweetie? A little treasure? A right little puppet, aren't you? And you smile at everyone, don't you, Maisie Pops? You do. We get into town and have a wander around, looking in the windows and seeing all the colours. We love anything shiny, don't we, Maisie? We look in the windows and eat our packed lunch that Mummy made before we left, don't we? We wander down to the park. There's a sheltered bit just outside the bowling green. It's Crown Green Bowling, and we watch it sometimes, don't we, Maisie Moo? And we eat our packed lunch and watch the people go about their busy lives. We watch until it's time for your nap, Maisie. Then Mummy wheels you along whilst you snooze and... Yes, that's it, darling. And then Mummy gets on the bus home. And when you wake up, we're all safely back home and nearly bath time. We love the bus, don't we, Maisie? We love the sounds and the people and the journey. We love it all.
I sit at the back. I can watch everyone from there. Watch, but I'm not directly involved. I prefer it. Prefer detachment. 20 years ago, I'd have been the leery one, all swagger and piss, confrontational to the nth. But now I sit at the back and watch the new leeries, the piss and vinegar, the bile and the filth. I watch and I fear. I love who I am now. The real me, who I was always supposed to be. I'm not that smoking, cheap cider swilling layabout who was in it for the aggro, scaring anyone who got in his way. His way? Who did I think I was? And what the hell was I thinking? Actually, I know what I was thinking. Get in first before someone guesses and kicks the shit out of you for being so freakish. A bloke who doesn't want to be a bloke. I mean, that's just... Well, that's how it felt. Inside, I mean. How it felt inside. With my older sister, well... I always loved the clothes. Not just the clothes, but the fabrics. How they felt between my fingers. The patterns, the design, the cut. So much more interesting than a bomber jacket in a pair of grotty ripped jeans. I mean, I'm wearing ripped jeans now. But they're supposed to be like this. Like, the design is there and the cut. Besides, it cost me enough. I catch the bus and meet up with my older sister. And we go shopping. Proper girly shopping. And have a girly lunch in our fancy clothes.
It's like a refuge. A safe haven. I don't have to think, feel or interact. I can just sit and stare and watch the world go by. And no one wants anything of me except my past. Suits me. I can sit, empty my mind completely. Have a slip by. I don't notice. I'm on extended leave. Paid, but not at work. And the hours go by. In the house, the walls were too much. The stair carpet suffered because I'd go up and down all day long, desperate to travel outside of where I was. The car got lost and panicked, and the police brought me home. Then the authorities took my license away. I could walk, but best not to. Might not come home at all. The bus seems safest. He buys me a monthly travel pass so I can go where I like all day on the bus if I want. And the drivers, they know me, or as much as they want to. All right, love, is about standard, which is fine. Sometimes if I'm upset, they take me back to the depot and make me tea. Then call Chris. He's on first name terms with most of them. Says they're my guardians. They make sure I'm okay. Even if I don't want to be.
Love the bus. It's my favourite thing ever. It's so nice and the drivers are friendly and the seats are all furry like teddy bears. I am allowed to get on by myself and I've got a special card on a necklace and the card has got my picture on it that says it's only mine. And it has my name, which is Emily. You say it, Emily. And it has my telephone number in it in case of any problems on the bus, so the bus people can call my carer. I go to the charity shop by the shoe shop, and I help to put all the things that people give away to the shop. And I cannot believe the stuff that silly Billy people gives away sometimes. Like teddy bears, and pretty dresses, and ornaments, and pictures, and lots of really nice things. I can't believe it. And Janet, she works there too. And she's older than my nan was when she went up to heaven. So she is really old. She says she can't believe it neither. She says, Janet I mean, she says she thinks the silly billy people are very wasteful and not thankful. And they don't know what's good for them. And in her day, people had to make do and mend. I'm not sure what she means, but she gets cross, so it must be a bad thing. Sometimes people get onto the bus and mean. And they call me unnice names. Like stupid and mental and downy. Most people are nice and say hello, girly, and wave or smile. But sometimes they won't let me sit next to them. One boy who looked pretty with nice clothes and combed hair says, ugh. I'm not sitting by you because I might catch stupidy. He was all screwy-faced when he said it and wasn't pretty anymore, but the bus driver said, oi, don't you be nasty to little Miss Emily. She's my friend and you need to get off my bus. and he made the mean boy get off and walk in the rain, and his combed hair was all wet, and I thought, that serves you right. Ha! I'll never be a pretty girl and be clever, but I know I'm not mean.
I hate the bus. I hate that Mum won't drive me to school. She's such a bitch. Just dumps him at the bus stop. Doesn't matter if it is pissing down. She does not give one. Dumps me, drives off, dry and warm. Listen to bloody boring radio, bloody fool. In a bloody boring car. Goes to a boring, bloody, important secretary job in Boringsville. I hate school. The whole bus journey there, I'm thinking about how much I hate school and cannot wait to leave. The popular girls with their cool bags and shoes, and their stupid highlighted hair. The bitch won't let me have mine done. Says there's plenty of time for that in the future. Sod the future. If I had cool hair, maybe I could be like them. I hate my life. I want to be cool.
Brilliant. So that was The Woman on the Bus by Joe Tandy. Fantastic. Read by Bernadette and the brilliant guest reader, Emma Waterford. Our next story is called Heaven Sent, and it's by Susan Handley.
The chairlift creaked and groaned as it made its way skyward, the white landscape below me as barren as the moon. The minus 20 degrees made my nostril hairs crunch and the breath plume from my mouth. I'd lost all feeling in my fingers and toes some time ago. The whole sky began to shimmer and twinkle as tiny, shiny flecks of ice drifted down around us. It was as though some divinity, high in the firmament, had pursed their lips, leaned in close, and let out a long, slow breath over a palm filled with diamond dust. I looked up at the sun, subdued by the heavy dusting of white that hung in the air, its aura just a hazy glow. It looked like a portal into another world, or maybe heaven, opening its doors to greet us. Suddenly, the lift lurched to a stop. The groans of skiers replaced that of the decrepit engineering. I stayed quiet, trying to ignore the swell in my stomach, the loss of momentum causing us to swing gently, despite the lack of breeze. Still, the diamond dust continued to fall. Sitting next to me, Ben, my husband of 20 years, gave me a nudge and gestured with a nod to the pretty spectacle. Mary would love this. He must have noticed the crimp in my brow, as clear as any spoken question, as he added, "This is the sort of day a unicorn might fly in." Mary, my middle one, born on Christmas Day, a happy, chuckling child, Mary by name, Mary by nature. Her laughter regularly ran out around the house as she played with her dolls. Alone. My time too much in demand to join her tea party, teddy bear's picnic, or marriage of the Snow Queen, which without me in the lead role was inevitably a non-event. Time ticked by, though exactly how much it was impossible to say. No one dared bare flesh to check watches or phones, and so we waited. I shrank further into my jacket to fend off the chill, no longer interested in making small talk. The frozen air shocked everyone into silence, faces too numb to move. Even the lads on the lift in front, previously singing and leg swinging, fell still. Thank God. My mind, not yet so cold as to have grown sluggish, wandered. I thought of my parents, both now dead. Were they peeping through the portal in the sky high above us? Would they approve of my life choices? Probably not, seeing how little I had approved of theirs. Their early demise testament of their tendency to excess. But just then I would have been glad had there been more of me to fend off the cold. My size 8, fat 3, calorie-counted physique more fitting for a bikini than a snowsuit. I shuffled closer to Ben, hoping to share what little body warmth we had, and felt him lean in. I conjured up a bowl of steaming soup, a crouton dripping with melted cheese and maybe a carafe of red wine seeping through my veins and heating my frozen bones. My stomach growled angrily. I figured it to be almost lunchtime and realised with a shock just how long we'd been there, suspended, at least an hour, then thought, how much longer? So on we hung, lives on pause, growing slowly older, colder. I was beyond cold. A trickle of fear crawled down my spine and gripped my gut, silencing its complaints. My appetite abandoned me. Like on the previous Mother's Day, when I'd awoken to breakfast in bed made by my eldest. I remember the look on Troy's face as I sent him and the burnt toast back to the kitchen, more concerned for my bed linen than his feelings. The same bed linen that sported a dark stain, like some ink block test, made when my pen slipped from my grip as I fell asleep annotating reports late into the night. I wondered what the stained shape might tell me had I been brave enough to look. I wondered if that was why my boy had never surprised me since. With my mind turned to my children, I said a silent prayer of thanks that they were safe on the lower slopes, glad not to have to worry about them. The littlest ones grew cold so quickly. When they were tiny, I remember wanting, dreaming, wishing them a future of happiness to be shared with children and grandchildren of their own. As I reminisced, slowly my thoughts grew frosty as I felt. How could I teach them happiness? What sort of role model was I? The only time I came close to happy was during the 4 paltry weeks holiday I took each year from my high-flying, high-paying, highly regarded prison cell of a job. My frozen face served to remind me of the ever-present fake smile that I pasted on my lips as I drove to work each morning, as my heart sank with each passing mile, taking me down with it, shackled to a 9-to-9 existence like a modern-day slave. And for what? The latest gadgets, the designer clothes, the shiny new car that conveyed me to my day of drudgery as smooth and fast as possible. I thought of the diamonds that adorned my fingers, studded my ears and in theory smoothed my pores, as even my moisturiser contained traces. So they said. I looked up. Still the sky showered us with ice crystals that glittered and shimmered in the light. I remembered a time when the only lure diamonds had for me was when, wide-eyed with awe, I'd learned how those shiny white gems were little different to the grimy black coals formed from plants that had thrived in a verdant world millions of years ago. My mind flashed back to the pressed oak leaf stuck to the fridge door, an offering from my youngest, Joshua, left there for me to see on my return from work long after his bedtime. I remember gazing down at his cherubic face when, just born, they laid him swaddled on my chest, watching him, adoring him, gently stroking him as he slept in my arms. His rounded cheeks and button nose had melted my heart, and at that moment a warmth spread through me, and for the first time I was able to forget about my icicle-like fingers. A jolt shocked me out of my reverie. The overhead cable started to hum as electricity brought the light. A jolt shocked me out of my reverie. The overhead cables started to hum as electricity brought the lift to life. I looked ahead. The chair in front hung down from a hook, pulled skywards by a simple pulley, drawn heavenwards by unseen forces, like a life whose trajectory is set, its end defined. The occupants of the lift, the 4 lads, recommenced their singing, swinging their legs, carefree. And suddenly relief flooded through me, washing away the cold, foggy chill that dulled my senses for so long. At that moment, I realised that life's not defined by its start or end. It's what you do while travelling through that matters. Whether it's a swift, straightforward journey, or one delayed, beset with complications. Overwhelmed with ideas and plans for a better life, my heart filled with gratitude and love, and a feeling of joy warmed me to the core. I thought of my children and resolved that in future I would be as big a part of their journey as they have been and would always be of mine. I could see now how even the smallest actions could make the biggest impact, and was determined never to forget it. Skybound once more, I laughed loudly and exuberantly. It wasn't heaven that had opened for me, it was my mind. Opened to the wonder of life. next up and the last story in our series is OK Daddy Longlegs and the Infinite Web by Niamh Bagenal.
I liked listening to human chats on the way to school. Kiara and the brothers, Mike and Gurr. Funny, happy patter soothed me drowsy after a night out gathering. And I'd grown fair fond of the three of them. This fog-blurred Thursday morning, Kiara was the first to see the glow. Though it happened fast, I can say definite. As you might know, human things happened painful slow for a mouse such as me, so I had loads of time to see. It glowed there, quietly in that patch they cut through on the way to school. The trees were hushed around it, gathered in excitement. Kiara's eye fell on the nibble of light and surprise lit her. She pointed, and Mike almost walked on it, but saw and gasped. Gurr was last to notice, as Gurr usually is, but he had a foot to it before I could shiver a warning whisker. Gurr's famous for this, making up for slowness by trying to act all fast. His foot expanded the glow, widening a green flow whirlpool of light. He soon felt the pull on one foot stuck fast. His other began sinking too. Kiara and Mike were too honourable to do like him if the portal was on the other foot. Mike found a branch for him to grasp while Kiara held tight around his waist. I stood close to keep an eye, and that's how we all got sucked down. It was something like a tube slide you might have gone through, flashing different colours as we slipped under. The kids, being human, hadn't been aware till the very now that parallel worlds exist. It's something slow human brains struggle with. We had landed in an odd place too. Colourful insects, big as humans, went about their day, hurrying a scurry-like in a big city. An elderly moth ruffled wings in surprise at our arrival, while a glum-looking snail hardly raised a tentacle. Several scampering woodlice almost knocked us over. I checked my wrist hairs, and as I suspected, rush hour. Come, we better get less conspicuous, I said. We caused a backlog. Shimmering dragonflies tuttered to each other. I said we should have flown, Maurice. One scolded another. A large crane fly flitted up the queue, investigating the kerfuffle. Come on! Through here! I tried again, and finally they followed. I'd been almost about to ditch my friends. Crane flies can be cranky some, and I wasn't wanting to give out. When we safely entered the side path and they'd heard all that safe to say about parallel worlds and portals and why they suddenly understood me, we got on to discussing what was next. Naturally, we were all in favour in thinking of finding another way home, but I had nerves. I wasn't sure how far I'd get them through this world. Kiara and Mike keep up okay, but Gurr caused doubts. What if you stay here? I suggested. They looked around the little path, doubtful. I don't mean right here. Their little faces shone with relief. I mean this world, just for safety.
And never see home, said Mike. And our families again.
That's the spirit, I said. It was going much better than expected. Splendid, even. Gurr bunched his mouth and turned away. Kiara eyed me closely, half grinning. You're messing.
He's only messing, guys. You know, on a real adventure, kids always get home in the end.
She nodded to them both.
That's what happens. Come on, Mousie, tell them. I raised a paw at that.
One thing, honey, you can't just name me no more than I could name you.
I gave her my worstest look. Humans think they can name animals as they happen upon us. It's like we never existed before they've seen us with their silly, slow eyes.
My name is Arthur Kissy Squeak, or OK for short.
OK, all three said immediately, making themselves giggle.
It took the bunching off Gurr's mouth, at least.
I thought to take them down Butterfly District, a place to settle. They'd be big enough to mind the giant caterpillars, who are sort of cute once you're over the cheeks, permanently chubby with leaves. The adults would surely share some nectar in return. It wouldn't be a bad life. Suddenly, a shadow fell, and I caught a whiff of cat. It was Doke, the Cheshire, crosser of worlds, my arch enemy, never far behind my adventures. Honestly, it's like she has a tracker for me.
Kiara took a step backwards, for in this world, the dratted thing was about as tall as a house.
Mike stared, open mouth. Gurr was the last to notice. Only when the fur on Doke's chin tickled his noggin did he glance up. He then did the silliest thing. No curling up in a ball, running away for the boy Gurr. No, he had to grab at the fluff, pulling her giant jaw downward sharp and causing her to shake him off roughly. She plucked him up by his hoodie then and sprinted away with him. The two remainers looked at me.
Well, we can forget Caterpillar Crash, I told them. We'll have to consult Daddy Longlegs in the banana cave. He's the only one that can help.
You know, said Mike to Kiara as they trailed reluctantly behind, Daddy Longlegs has the most poisonous poison.
Yes, she said. But they don't have teeth big enough to use it.
In our world, yes, but...
He didn't finish the thought.
We reached the cave at dusk. It was a bit beyond Earwig Fields and just before Centipede Town. Its distinctive banana-shaped entrance is said by some to be specially designed to lure fruit flies, but I don't believe that personally. Insect world is mostly very civilised. A little money spider guarded the gate. His eyes flickered, wicked, as he granted us entry.
Oh, don't mind him, said the wheedly thin voice of the Daddy Longlegs himself when he appeared, smiling widely, his dark, woolly teeth, six eyes fixed two to each of us. We're perfectly friendly, I assure you.
His great legs twitched, and I began to wonder if we'd made a mistake.
You want to rescue your friend, right? If Doke hasn't already torn into shreds, that is.
He ha-ha'd laughed, almost evil-sounding.
Well, let's check on him, shall we?
He ushered us towards a haphazard web that spanned the gigantic cavern. He pressed on a drop of dew at the corner, lighting it up. The web came alive with images. The daddy reached out with his six legs and began searching, zooming, clicking in and out of hundreds of options. Images and moving pictures danced before him. We could see that behind the web, the walls were covered in large holes that looked like portal entrances. Scratched above each was a different and rather badly spelled address.
The past. Swamp. Volcano. Wood.
I struggled to read them, for the cave mouth was the only source of the day's fading light. The legs jostled web strands till at last he settled on one image. There was Gurr, snuggled up contently, not a scratch on him. Six disgusting, repulsive, fluffy kittens surrounded him, intertwined with his sleeping form. The young of the dastardly Duke. Kiara rolled her eyes.
typical. Landed on his feet like that. Mike said.
Do we think he needs rescuing?
I suppose we better. Okay, said Daddy Longlegs.
What?
I asked.
Oh, I said. Then understanding from the silence that he hadn't meant to call me. He climbed the web. He reached his woolly fangs into the image. For the second time that day, Gurr was hoisted by the scruff of his hoodie. He was brought safely back in an instant to the banana cave. It took some convincing of him that this cold darkness was better than his yucky kitten cuddles.
Now to send you nuisances home, said the daddy.
Without a trace of emotion, he wrapped us all together, glued up in webbing. When we were tightly balled, he bounced and sailed us through the air. I thought we were for splatting on the cave wall. The time in flight I spent thinking over my life and hoping we weren't on the way anywhere horrible. I needn't have worried. He aimed us perfect through the blackness, straight for a nice wide portal. We landed, safe, back in the woods, just seconds after we left. Dawn's fog continued drifting, blurring everything. The only change was a glistening green leaf where the glow had been. Sadly, the children's memory had been wiped by the return. All they felt was a vague, unexplained joy and an odd sort of tiredness for so early in the morning. I fondly goodbyed them, but of course they didn't hear. If you're ever very happy or tired for no apparent reason, it might be that you have just got back from an adventure in another world. Please do look around and listen out for squeaks next time that happens. And be sure to goodbye me back.
Niamh Bagnall. Brilliant story.
It's fantastic, yes. Thank you very much to all of our writers throughout all the four podcasts of Wonder. We've really enjoyed reading everybody's stories and hearing them.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. So thank you once again, all our writers.
And thank you very much to Revelation Ashford and to Deborah McGee for making it all possible. And we'll be back in touch shortly with news about further storytelling adventures.
And thanks for listening, and stay safe, and we'll see you very soon.
Bye.
Bye.